a premium out there right now. Phoenix is probably number one in the country right now. But the Southeast and North Carolina, South Carolina, there's some opportunities there too. You know, you think about where people set up shop and manufacture things, people who make things, and generally you're going to find them in these kind of markets.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Javier Hinojo, of the Naked Truth about Real Estate Investing. And today I have Drew from California. His company does does commercial real estate. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about how COVID was for them, for their tenants. And he can share some insight on what he did to his company, did to a shift and pivot during those times. And maybe talk a little bit about some of the, any issues, major issues from tenants out there that could not pay in COVID. So I didn't ask how to pronounce your last name. So I didn't want to screw it up. How do I pronounce your last name?
That's all right. Drew Walgren.
Walgren. Okay. I was going to say Walgreen, but Walgren is pretty close. I was just going to say my last name. Every time I screw it up, I always say my last name. So we have it. So, but I just going to have Drew just kind of give a quick bio, history or about himself and his company. Go ahead, Drew.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here. So yeah, no, I'm with Matt Capital Partners. We're a small shop here and I've been investing passively in commercial real estate for a long time and actually had invested with a few sponsors, including Matt Capital Partners. And so a few years ago, I joined the team and it's been history ever since. We continue to kind of grow what we're doing, which is really investing primarily in single tenant industrial properties, usually with single tenants and long triple net leases. So very passive kind of investment, right? We're unloading all the responsibility of taxes and insurance. And I know you know what triple net is, but for anyone who's not aware, that tenant is responsible for taxes, insurance, and utilities, even maintenance and capital expenditures. So roof and paving the parking lot, what have you. So really passive investment. We like it. We're able to scale a very predictable cash flow in these investments. So it's been a great run. And certainly industrial's been a hot asset class for a while, but especially ever since COVID, right? There's a lot of demand for it out there. So we continue to find opportunities. And I'm really happy that we're holding the portfolio that we have of industrial. So it's a nice place to be.
Cool. So then what do you do for your company?
I'm on the capital market side. So I work with the lenders as we make acquisitions. We do about 8 to 10 acquisitions a year. So always working on projects, lots of irons in the fire, right? So I'm working on debt with lenders, usually a lot of local banks and credit unions and regional banks on that side. But of course, we bring in equity from private investors. So I work with private investors. We, as they say, we syndicate the deal. Basically, we bring in private investors into these, and it's a cash flow play with profit on the back end. So right now, especially, it's been really popular with private investors because everyone's looking around at the market saying, hey, prices are pretty high. I'm looking for yield. So that's really the play that we offer. And a lot of people are sort of running in this direction over here, which has been great to be able to show people some opportunities for yield.
Perfect. So a couple of questions. Thank you for explaining the triple net lease. So let me try to see if I can simplify, even though you did a good job. So basically triple net lease is you sign the lease and they take care of everything. Like if the taxes go up, the tenant pays, right? The HVAC goes out, the tenant pays. You know, plumbing, something happens, the tenant pays. Everything, the tenant pays everything. So it's a nice way to get some good sleep at night, right? Where you don't have to really worry about anything that's happening. So did I get that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we affectionately call it an absolute triple net lease when it's even the roof and all those large capital expenditure items are included in there. So it's pretty common in the single tenant real estate world, right? Because, you know, you're occupying all four walls and the roof, and it makes sense, especially with a company that's looking for a long-term commitment. A lot of times they're using a long-term lease as a way to sort of smooth out any volatility in the market, you know, where they could see some increases in rents that they weren't planning on. So they could say, hey, okay, I'm going to sign a 15 or 20 year lease. That's generally what we're signing with our tenants. So 2% increases, maybe 2.5%, 3% over time. It's pretty manageable, right? They know it's very predictable increase in their overhead over time. So they like that. And of course, we like that as well. Hey, I have I'm at the front end of a very long, you know, 20 year lease commitment here with triple net terms. And, you know, I should talk a little bit about the type of acquisitions we make, because generally we're doing a lot of sale leasebacks, and that's a big part of what we do, and what kind of gives us a lot of structure around the type of risk profile we're running into here, because we are simultaneously acquiring properties from a seller who is a company, a commercial business, usually in the industrial side, manufacturing, food production, whatever it might be in that world. And so they're looking to sell the asset and simultaneously lease back. So that's the type of acquisition we're making most of the time. And it's a fantastic instrument. It's really a financing instrument for the tenant. So they're looking to access capital to grow the company.
Okay. That was my next question.
They see the benefit there. They can look at a couple different sources of financing to grow the company. You know, hey, I'm the CEO. I have a few initiatives. I want to do X, Y, and Z. Usually they take capital, right? So what are my options here? They work with their CFO. Okay, what can we do? And you can get traditional bank financing, senior debt. It comes with a lot of restrictive covenants though, right? So, hey, you have to watch these certain financial metrics. You can't do X, Y, and Z. So it can be a little bit restrictive there if they want to do other things in the future. So oftentimes they're looking around at other options, and this is becoming a more and more popular alternative for companies to finance the growth, because these are companies who've been around for decades. I mean, 50, 60, 70 years. We did a deal recently I can talk about in a few minutes. A tenant was over 150 years old, right? So a lot of these guys have been around for a while and occupying this real estate for a while, investing a lot of money into equipment, the upkeep of the property. So generally they're very familiar with the property. They've been there for a long time. They've operated out of it. They've taken good care of it because they have some pride of ownership. And of course, you got to take care of the bones of your operation, right? I can't manufacture components while the roof is leaking. So these guys take really good care of it. And so they're a lot more apt to sign triple net terms, right? Hey, we've been taking care of this asset. We know the condition it's in, of course. And so we're happy to do that over the long term. And generally, when you have a triple net lease, the rent's going to be a little lower, right? I mean, there is a trade-off there versus, you know, maybe a retail asset where the landlord is responsible for a lot. So in this case, the lease rate's going to be a little bit lower. And that's pretty, you know, it's natural, right? You're sort of putting a lot of that responsibility on the tenant. But from a management side, it's fantastic for a real estate landlord. You have
to
push a lot of that on them there.
Okay. So my follow-up to that was why would somebody want to sell their building and go back in and lease it out? What you answered. My next question would be, why wouldn't a tenant, like say, or one of the sellers be like, let me just refinance my building and take some proceeds out? Maybe you can only get a certain loan to value, or?
Exactly. Okay. That's the answer there. Hey, I can access 70% here. You know, I might have $10 million, but I have initiatives that require, let's just say $9 million, right? So I can only access 7 with a line of credit. Okay, you know, here's another option where I can access all that. And now, let's say in this case, right, the property's worth $10 million, right? And that's pretty fair down the middle price, let's just say, with the type of lease rate that they want to pay, right? Because that cap rate's important here. So in that case, what's really great about this instrument, it's a sophisticated transaction because you are negotiating not only the acquisition price, but the lease rate, the lease terms, right? Maybe some prepaid rents up front or what kind of deposit they have. So all these pieces, there's a lot of things to wade through in order to get the transaction done. So in that case, let's say, hey, we need $9 million. And maybe the tenant says, the seller in this case and tenant, they say, hey, you know what? We'll take a little bit less in proceeds. You know, I only need nine. I'll take $9.5 million or even $9 million. And I'd like you, you know, let's say we're at a 7% capitalization rate. That cap rate, we're going to keep that the same. We're just going to bring down rents and I'll give you a sweet deal on the acquisition price. So, you know, they're lining up a long-term low overhead, which is fantastic for us, right? I want to have a really strong mitigation against risk just in case I do have an empty building at some point. I have a very low rent overhead, a very low debt service coverage that I need to cover while I re-tenant a building. So all that puts you in a really conservative place and you're able to attract a new tenant easier. And you have a stickier tenant, right? You're much less likely to have someone break a lease if they're going, hey, I'm looking around, I got a great deal on the lease right here. So all those things come together and you say, hey, this is fantastic. So it's always fun to work with the seller and find out, hey, what are your needs? What are you looking for here? Do you want more proceeds? Do you want better overhead rates? What are you looking for? And let's make a deal happen, because these guys generally aren't looking for just the highest price. They're generally looking for... Yeah, a partner and someone who can execute on the transaction.
Right? Sure.
I can't have a buyer that goes through 3 months of this and then they, you know, they fall apart, right? Oh, I couldn't get the financing or the equity, whatever it is. they just fall apart. And that happens quite a bit with people who haven't been in the space for a while. So these sellers, they really know, they're looking for buyers that have that reputation. So that's really helped us specialize in this kind of transaction, because you have buyers and their brokers looking around going, hey, here are some buyers that are really, they've done this transaction before. They execute on what they say they'll do. So having that reputation has helped us get some off-market deals from the brokerage community. And even really quickly, I'll say there's a whole private equity community as they're purchasing operating companies, and they have portfolios of all kinds of manufacturing companies, let's say. And sometimes they will look to do this transaction as they purchase a company, or later on just to finance the growth of the company. Whatever it is, they're looking, hey, let's spin off the real estate and use this capital to grow the companies. That's sure. What PE groups do, right? So When you've done one or two with these guys, they really turn to you and give you, you know, off-market opportunities.
Yeah.
Kind of so, keep that relationship
going. So you show is very key, because you show you can perform, right? And Somebody has a project and they need to say, okay, who can perform, right? So it's very easy to go to your company. Maybe they have a short list and they can just go hit 2 or 3 people right away and to probably find a buyer, you know, if it's a good fit for you guys. So it's a nice way to get off-market deals for sure, right? Straight from brokers and from connections, especially from, proving you can close. So I get a lot of people.
Right,
so go ahead.
I was going to say, because of that reputation and some of that momentum there, that reputational capital, whatever you want to call that, we're able to compete with a lot of institutions. And frankly, most of these acquisitions, that's the other offers that are coming in generally. We're seeing big publicly traded REITs, other large institutional capital coming in, and it's tough, right? They got a lower cost of capital, yep. And these guys are big boys. But since we've had this experience here, basically you have a lot of these institutions because of how sophisticated that transaction is. So it's this is an area where you're seeing a lot of individuals come in. It's a very, you know, B2B kind of transaction. You know, you have institutions playing in the space because of that.
Yeah, super cool. I like to see that. I like to see even not the big guys, right? You guys are 6 in your office, you know, get some of that deal flow. It's just nice.
You know, yeah, exactly. Nice. And so, well, it's great for us and to work with the private investors, because people say, hey, this is something I don't have a lot of access to, right? I mean, I really think of what we offer to investors is, hey, here's an institutional investment here. This is something that you're going to find from a REIT, right? But of course, you're going to get, because of the inefficiencies of a REIT, for instance, you're going to get a lower return and, of course, less transparency, right? You don't have access to the management there. And of course, you don't have any kind of control over what they're investing in. You know, we're really just doing individual offerings and not running a fund. So yeah, we really put it out there and go, hey, we're going to stand behind each of these individual investments on their own and really stand behind the real estate, but namely the credit of the tenant. And I know I didn't quite get to that, but that's really where the risk is in these investments.
Which actually brings me to the next question, right? You say you were talking about single tenant, right? So I know the audience listening to this, like, oh, single tenant, you know, what happens if you leave? So you hit only single tenants, or so explain to me that process. So is it always a lease back to the seller, or have you bought a property where you actually had to find a tenant for it? And what are the risks and what are the rewards from a single tenant?
Traditionally, we don't do a lot of lease up kind of plays. Okay. That's a little bit more risky than what we want to do. We like the sale leasebacks because you have that tenant in place, right? There's no lease up, there's no TIs, they're well established in the property. So cash flows from day one, right? Hey, we close on the property and the same day they're signing on this lease and rent begins. So it's a nice thing. You have 100% occupancy, no expenses, really long-term commitment. So we've kind of removed all that risk, right? That comes with value adds or lease up plays, all of that operational risk, as I call it. And that risk profile is just different. It's on the credit of this tenant. So you look at this and go, well, what could go wrong, right? I have all these pieces in place. Cash flow is the pro formas are very simple, right? Here's your rent. The net operating income is a straight line across, right? There's no expenses coming out of that. So you see this very predictable cash flow with increases over time. But all of that is dependent on this tenant remaining solvent, paying rent, right? It's not that I need to, it is a bit different than investing into the equity of a company where you'd like them to grow. Really, as a landlord, I just want them to at least stay flat, right? Hey, I don't care if your revenues don't grow at all, right? Just stay stable, profitable, pay your rent.
They're making money though, yeah? They're making money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if they grow, that's fantastic, right? You may even see some credit enhancement in that tenant as they grow. and they use this sale leaseback to access proceeds and grow the company. So possibly you see in 5 years, growth of the company, hey, revenues are up, EBITDA is up, all of these, their credit profile has been enhanced. And now the asset actually will trade for a little bit higher of a price because of that. Now you're talking about a stronger tenant that's backing that lease. So again, we don't underwrite for that. We're just looking for assuming that these guys will stay flat across the hold of the asset. But yeah, this is where we spend a lot of our time in due diligence. You know, we have a credit analysis team and we're not a bunch of real estate guys that are just looking at numbers going, well, it looks pretty good to me. Now we bring in the big dogs. You know, we have a couple guys on our team that have a long history of corporate credit analysis and really understand, you know, the games that some of these companies play. And
yeah, try to pat their P&L. You know, they try to make it look good because what happens with these industrial and like retail buildings or just real estate, you know, it's the value of your real estate really depends on the tenant, you know? Yep. If you got a startup, you know, and you have a whole bunch of office buildings and you have a bunch of startups in there, well, you probably can't sell it very high. But if you have some strong tenants in there, it definitely helps if you're going to sell. I mean, for sure. Right.
Yeah,
so you guys do a lot of research on the tenants.
Yeah. And the space we're playing is with private credit tenants. So, you know, there's a whole spectrum. Like you said, you know, you don't want your startup in there because they really don't have credit. Right. There's just, you know, what are you looking for there? And I'll get back to that in a second. But on the other end of the spectrum, you have national credit tenants, right? I have, you know, Amazon, right? They'd be the golden boy for industrial credit on a lease. And that's going to trade for a ridiculous premium, right? Institutional money will come in there. They'll park it and say, hey, we're making 3%. Maybe we're keeping up with inflation. We're happy with that, right? So that's the spectrum there. We're kind of in the middle, right? We're looking at private credit tenants. They're established companies, but they don't have that credit rating, right? I can't go find a corporate bond credit rating of a AA-, you know, what you see out there for these large companies. So these are privately held. And so it's a little bit of a, I don't want to say a mystery, but it's not public information. So we do a lot of due diligence there and they're cooperative, right? In a sale leaseback, they're the seller. So they're looking to be as cooperative as possible, show all their financials. And so we dig in really deep to look at the basics, of course. You just talk about P&Ls, like I said, their balance sheet, but then you get deeper, right? What's their customer concentration level? Are they dependent on one person? What are their debt levels? Okay, you have a senior debt lender here that you have a line of credit with. What are the terms and covenants around that debt? Have you ever come close to breaking those and default on that, right? All these items you start looking at the management team. Sometimes their private equity group is backing them. What's their history and their reputation, right? So all these things, it's a lot there. You know, we're talking about weeks, if not months, generally, of due diligence on the credit of these tenants. You know, numerous phone calls with different people in their C-suite just to kind of get a better understanding. And that's kind of what we take pride in, is that's kind of our competitive edge here, is we're able to really understand the risk around these tenants. And, you know, there's always some kind of risk, right? Hey, we're...
Oh, for sure.
50% of our revenues come from automotive customers. Okay, well, if they can't get chips, for instance, and produce Ford Fusions, right, then maybe your sales all of a sudden pull back. You know, so all these things, there's always some risk. And it's for us, we sleep really well at night because we really understand what the risks are and what there's out there. So a lot of times there's a fair amount of strength here. And being private credit, there's a certain perceived amount of risk around these tenants that's not understood really until you do this due diligence. And a lot of times you're finding kind of a delta between the perceived risk and the actual risk. It's kind of like an arbitrage, right? Sure. Hey, you know, this thing's trading and being priced at a 7.5% cap rate. I mean, honestly, if people knew more and knew, understood this company better, they'd probably be at like a 6.5% cap rate, right? And maybe not that big of a spread, but still, you see what I'm saying?
For sure.
There's a spread there. And you really realize after being in this space for a while that, hey, there's an opportunity here. This is a fantastic tenant, but it's perceived a little bit because of X, Y, or Z as maybe not as strong as they really are.
Cool. So that brings me to my other question that I had. Like, what's your, like, kind of your sweet spot, right? Like, what kind of size you're looking for, or like a purchase price? You know, what areas, what part of the country? So I know you're in California.
Yeah, no, I'm one of a few of us out here in the Bay Area here, but we're a Texas-based firm, and but we invest all over the country. And you know, people have kind of said, oh, you focus on the Midwest and Texas because I'm looking at your track record here. That's not really the case. We're agnostic, but what you're going to find for these kinds of opportunities are companies who set up in the Midwest and the Sun Belt, and they're not going to be on the coast generally because why? Why would you, right? The cost of labor and overhead is much higher. And if I'm manufacturing a product that maybe I make ATVs, right? ATV vehicles, right? I send these products all over the country, if not the world. Why do I need to be on Made in Maine in Dallas, you know, that or in the Bay Area, for instance, here? The cost is too high. So what you see a lot of times is these opportunities and these companies that have deliberately set up shop in sometimes tertiary locations or sort of the maybe a fairly good market, but on the outskirts. Because again, why would you set up that operation in downtown? It doesn't make sense, of course. So they're looking to set up shop somewhere that makes sense, where there's access to labor, but it's more cost-effective labor. So we'll see a lot of opportunities, you know, Illinois, Indiana, the Minnesota and Wisconsin area, but also, you know, Texas, Arizona is a very hot market. There's lots of opportunities there, but they're pricing really premium. You know, it's a premium out there right now. Phoenix is probably number one in the country right now. So, but the Southeast and, you know, where you're at in North Carolina, South Carolina, there's some opportunities there too. So I hope that kind of makes sense. But yeah. You know, you think about where people set up shop and manufacture things, people who make things, and generally you're going to find them in these kind of markets.
Sure. All right. So can you talk about a previous project or just kind of give the audience?
Sure. Yeah. We just closed on a recent deal, one of the larger ones. And I know you kind of asked about what size. We're generally in the sort of $5 million to $25 million acquisitions. You know, once you get higher than that, you get a lot of institutional money that, again, really can slim down yields because they come in with a low cost of capital. So we like this space here. It's perfect for us and our equity group of investors that come in. So, yeah, we did one on the larger end just recently closed in Lancaster, Ohio. It's right in that Columbus market there. A company called Babcock & Wilcox. In this case, actually not a private company. They're publicly traded. And these guys manufacture boiler systems for steam generation for you know, utilities and power plants, all of these types of companies that are using these systems to generate power, right? So they not only manufacture these systems, but all the parts and cleaning equipment and everything there. And they go back to 1867. It's kind of unbelievable. You get some old manufacturing companies that have been around for a long time, especially around the auto industry too. So, but in this case, we had a very strong player in this tenant. And we worked with them to get this deal done. And this was 8 months of conversation. And, you know, they actually went to another buyer first. And we talked about this earlier, right? We need to execute on this transaction. This other buyer kind of waffled on them and they kind of hung with them. And so we were always sort of on the side in this conversation. And eventually they said, okay, we've had it with these guys, Mad Capital Partners. You know, you say you can execute. Can you do this? We made a couple quick calls just to make sure the debt we had that was interested and our financing partners were still on board. And once we found that out, we really said, yes, we can commit to this and close within under 60 days. So that's always something, if you can reliably say that, they go, great. You know, we're trying to make this take this next step. And, you know, here we've burned, you know, 6-8 months here in talks with someone else here. So it's for them, you know, you have a motivated seller. And as a buyer, it's always a great position to be in, right? I don't care if you're in residential, right? Single family homes or anywhere else, a motivated seller is what you want because you'll get the deal done with some kind of terms that everyone can work with. So in this case, so yeah, you have a company with 600 plus million in revenue globally. You know, they're selling parts to and systems all over the world. And, you know, I don't think steam generation for power production is going away anytime soon. So these guys are very, you know, and sure, there's other alternatives, but this kind of system is used for 50% of the U.S.'s power production today. So it's not like it's going to go away overnight. So we signed a 20-year lease, and you know, this is one of those, you know, you look forward and you go, okay, these guys are going to be around for quite a bit of time, and they're evolving and creating more parts and innovation for even carbon recapture systems for existing power plants. So lots of forward thinking in the company. And so you look for that in a company.
Yeah, it's pretty neat that, you know, when it comes down to retail or industrial, right, you got to do some good research on your tenants, right? It's, you know, I own apartment buildings, right? So it's just like, hey, it's like you ran out to a tenant in an apartment and you just kind of see like they're a pay stub. Can they afford it? Yeah, but you don't even know if they have money in the bank, right? When you rent out, when you lease out to an industrial tenant, you get their financials. Like, hey, where are you making your money from? You know, it's like, it's really, really detailed. So that's huge.
That's the other side of that coin, right? You have a single tenant here, but on the other side, you have a complete understanding of who they are and their credit profile. And these guys, you know, you have a lot of recourse there, right? It's not like an apartment tenant who can pick up and leave and you go, you know, I can't get a hold of them, anything like that. And that's not a problem, right? Hey, it's one out of maybe 50 or 100 tenants in a property. So that's okay. But for us, we have a lot of recourse there. We understand who these guys are. And it's a B2B business here, right? These guys are generally, it's a far less emotional transaction than you can have with, for instance, you know, people that I know who invest primarily in single family houses, right? You get psychology and people's emotions involved around the property. And these guys are very much, again, pragmatic about the transaction. They're trying to achieve a goal. And so, frankly, I enjoy that a little bit more.
Cool. Well, there's two more things I'm going to ask you about. This is the naked truth about real estate investing, right? So I need to ask you, what is the biggest mistake you've made? And then from there, we're going to jump off to the naked truth roulette. So what is the biggest mistake that you've made? And how could you
go back recent history? At the beginning of this year, we were making an acquisition of a company that made prefabbed wall and fence systems in Texas. Three properties, great markets, right in San Antonio, Houston, and Austin, right? So you go, look, love this deal. They're being acquired by a private equity group. Private equity group goes, look, we're going to buy this company. We're not interested in holding the real estate. So Mad Capital Partners, sure, let's do a sale leaseback simultaneously with our acquisition. Now this transaction seemed to kind of get pushed back. It got pushed back and we're going, okay, what's going on? Oh, you know, we're working on, you know, this whole transaction was contingent on their acquisition of the business, right? So I hope that makes sense, but we're waiting as this private equity group is finalizing their capital stack, just like we do on our side with the real estate, right? Okay, we have our financing, we have our equity lined up, all these pieces. Well, private equity groups really operate in the same way. So what happened is eventually these guys just fell apart, right? So we had probably burned $40,000 in pursuit costs on this transaction. And what do you have for it at the end of the day? They go, oh yeah, you know, we have an equity partner who's out. They don't want any part of this thing anymore. So we're going, okay, so you're out then? And they said, yeah, you know, probably. I don't think we have anyone else going to come in. And so you just kind of dumbfounded after 4 months or so and all those pursuit costs. And you go, man, we have, you know, investors of our own that are on board here going, okay, you know, let us know when we're going to close on this thing. So in that case, I think, mistake there. And on our part, really, and what we learned was if you have that transaction that's contingent on another party, you got to do a little bit of due diligence on them, right? Here I am focused on the tenant and this kind of business and how strong they are, when in fact, we should have been looking a little bit more closely at this private equity group. And I think we gave them a little too much credit. And when in fact, they had their own sort of contingent equity that they were relying on. So there was a lot of risk there that we didn't realize in closing the deal. And so, you know, in hindsight, this is a common type of thing, right? We've done this three times before that. So I think we were feeling a little confident. Hey, we've done this before. What's the problem, right? The company closes on it. But in this case, it was probably a little bit younger private equity group. In fact, they had a little bit less experience. You know, they had two or three companies in their portfolio. And so this was something a little newer to them. They didn't have the same kind of access to capital that others do. So hindsight, know who you're. They really are a partner of ours, right? In that case, because they would be backing this tenant, you know, in ownership of this company. And so you really should get to know them very well. So now we do quite a bit more due diligence there.
Oh, awesome. Well, how does the audience get a hold of you? You guys have a newsletter. What's the best way for them to get a hold of you guys? If they want some more information, things like that.
Sure. You can email me directly, drew@magcp.com, like Mad Capital Partners, magcp.com, or you can go directly to our website. We have some information there. It's magcp.com, magcp.com.
And that'll be in the show notes for everybody. You guys go down there, sign up, get some. If you guys want to just check out industrial, you know, a little bit different, right? You're actually the first guest that we have that talks about industrial. We've talked about pretty much every single family apartment, self storage, mobile home parks. We just haven't talked about industrial. So I appreciate you being on the show.
it's a great place to diversify a little bit. You know, a lot of our investors go, look, you know, I do a lot of other things, but I have nothing over here. So I'm really happy to kind of look at something and an opportunity and find a place to be here, because it's right up there with multifamily, with asset classes and the strength there. And I keep, it's interesting though, because most of the investors I talk to are 80 or 90%, if not 100% in multifamily. And so I just go, look, you know, diversify a little bit. Multifamily is a great asset class, but, you know, look around, you know, self-storage is great. A lot of mobile home park operators out there do a great job. Industrial certainly stands up on its own too.
Awesome. Awesome, Drew. All right. So this brings me to the my favorite part, actually, of the show, which I'm going to go ahead and do this naked truth roulette. All right. So we're going to ask you just three random questions. Got nothing to do with real estate.
Yep. I'm looking at it. I'm getting nervous looking at all these wheels.
I don't even get nervous at that. We're good. We just got a couple of these. So we're all going to hear, we're going to hear some nothing to do, just personal stuff, right? Let's make sure that Drew is a real person. He's not a robot. Let's find out. So here we go. First question. You got two kids, you're married. So let's find out, what is the worst chore to do? What do you think is the worst chore?
I hate laundry. I suck at it. It's the worst. I think it's, I'm a taller guy. I'm 6'3". So I always feel like I'm trying to kind of bend down and get low and sort of lean over to fold clothes. It's the worst. I tell my wife, I'll trade in three other chores for that one if you'll do it.
No problem. Okay. So it is laundry as worst chore. Well, let me click my roulette button. That will show me the money. I don't know where my roulette
button is. That's my goal, right? If you get it successful enough in real estate, I can pay someone to do my laundry.
For sure. Oh, we might have a tough one for you here. Oh, you missed that one. All right. Well, this is the most used curse word, Drew. I don't know if you curse, but do you have a most used curse word?
Yeah. Can I say it on here?
You can say it. Oh, yeah. You can say it.
Yeah. Oh, it's shit. I just feel like every time I turn the corner. Yeah. The other day, apparently my wife or I had left out a can of spray paint. I think it was something she was working on in the backyard, and I came out and my 4-year-old just took it and tagged up the whole backyard, all kinds of things. And I just came out and said, shit.
All right. That's not too bad, dude. That's not too bad.
No.
All right. Let's go with the next question. All right. So if you had the world's attention for 30 seconds, what would you say?
Wow. That's a heavy one.
Yeah, I know. I have stuff from like taking a celebrity on a date anywhere you like to like, what would you tell the world? Right. It's from it's a wide range.
Oh, wow. You got to keep that pretty general, but, you know, maybe I would just tell them something really specific and I would just say, eat your veggies, you know,
eat your veggies. Yeah. So, check out, Mad Capital Group, you know, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Free marketing. You're saying this is a free marketing.
Yeah. Buy industrial, you know?
Yeah.
It's super cool.
I think I'll tell people, yeah, eat healthy, take care of yourself.
All right. Let me give you some applause here.
Thank you.
All right. So you survived the naked truth roulette. So it wasn't too bad. It wasn't too bad there, Drew.
No.
Hopefully I didn't get too nervous, but anything else you'd like to share with the audience before we let you go? And I really appreciate your time for being on.
No, just come check us out. I've been co-authoring a book with our COO about industrial. And so we're looking to have that out before the end of this year. Because like you said, a lot of people just haven't had a lot of exposure there. So it's kind of fun. People kind of go, hey, do you have any literature? How can I learn more about this? And, you know, it's hard to retain everything just through one conversation. So reach out to me. I mean, if nothing else, keep up on LinkedIn or email. And if you want to learn more, and like I said, hopefully we'll have something to push out there. And yeah, it's going to be something we just give away. We just want to kind of draw more attention to industrial and kind of expand the knowledge base, because I think it gets overlooked quite a bit. So yeah, come check us out. Say hello.
All right, everybody. This is Drew with Mad Capital. And you guys check him out. He's got some contact information. You'll see it on the show notes. Thank you so much for being on the show. I am Javier. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback, not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel or you can put it on Monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, Monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.